Riverside Morning. Sorry, I'm just mulling over that charge I heard in the newscast. Indecently interfering with human remains. Isn't that the most disgusting thing you've ever heard? Blech. Okay. How are our attitudes towards prescription drugs changing? A report released last year shows prescription opioids ranking second behind alcohol as an abused substance in HRM. Are we making any progress and are attitudes changing at all? And what are schools doing to warn students of the dangers of prescription opioids? Amy Graves has been working at this tirelessly, it seems, for a couple of years now since her brother Josh died. And she joins me on the phone to talk about this. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. This emanates out of a report actually that was released last year. And you discovered this report and sent it along to us. I don't know why it didn't seem to surface earlier, but it's an interesting discussion paper, I would think, in terms of the attitudes and the use of prescription opioids in the city. Maybe we can just go over some of these reports and let people know what the findings are. What was the most significant finding you thought regarding people's attitudes in the city towards substance abuse?
Well, first of all, I thought this report was very unique in the fact that the people who were surveyed were frontline professionals, people who either work in addiction services, are physicians in emergency rooms, people who deal with the effects of drug abuse, drug overdose, and drug addiction, as well as alcohol. So we often see surveys done by students in high schools or public opinion or people who have access to these services, and I just thought it was very interesting to get a perspective from the people who are actually working in these jobs. The most astounding statistic I saw in the report was that 88% of these professionals reported hydromorphone as a serious problem in HRM. 88% felt that this is a very serious issue and a drug that's being used in Halifax. Also, 67% of these professionals reported they believed that there was an increase in prescription drug IV use in the city. 48% of these professionals believed there had been an increase in trafficking of prescription drugs in HRM. And these questions were all asked within the last year, has there been an increase? So those are very startling statistics for a report that I had never heard before. And the people I have forwarded it to and professionals I've talked about haven't seemed to have this cross their desk. I'm wondering what was actually done with it when it was given to the municipality.
Well, especially since it's been out there kicking around since last April. And this was done by the Canadian Community Epidemiology Network on Drug Use. It was a survey. The numbers weren't huge, but I think what's important about this is the people that they did talk to had a direct connection with drug use and with, you know, the problems that it creates.
Yeah, exactly. They are the people dealing in addiction services and the doctors that are seeing these people come into emergency rooms. Another statistic I found that was quite startling was that 39% of these professionals indicated they believed there had been an increased death rate due to prescription drug overdoses in the city. I mean, that's almost half of all those people feel that there's been an increase in 1 year in prescription drug overdose deaths. What are they doing with this information, and are these professionals who express these opinions being taken seriously? The recommendations at the end of this report was to give this information to all the proper stakeholders who can affect change, and I'm wondering, you know, who got it? Where did it go? Because people I've talked to haven't seen it. Not to say it didn't go to some places, but then once they got it, did they shove it in a drawer? What effort has been made to combat this issue in HRM? Because I hear it all the time that it's a country issue, it's a rural issue, and it's not. Almost half of the deaths that occur in our province to prescription drugs happen in HRM.
And what's surprising about this, or what I found was surprising anyway, was normally when we think about drug abuse, we think about the, the old familiar players, and that is heroin and crack cocaine and some of these other drugs, which, they're obviously still serious, but that what we're seeing is that they're really falling off in terms of prevalence of use in favor of these prescription drugs, which is the thing that you've been raising the alarm on for the last while. If this is the case, what are we seeing happen now to address this issue, to take this seriously? There's been lots of talk about it. The province has discussed some of the strategies that are being put in place to try and deal with prescription drug use. But what's, from your perspective, happening on the ground?
Some changes that have been made are, most of them occurred in the Annapolis Valley due to all the attention there. And I don't think the problem there is any worse than anywhere else in the province. I think everyone should have the same resources that the Annapolis Valley received. They got over $300,000 to put into their addiction services and start a methadone clinic that was not Mud Creek Medical. Now, there is a methadone treatment program that's run by the District Health Authority. It's not a private clinic. And now last I heard, there was not a wait list. And if there is, it's only for a couple weeks, whereas before, wait lists in the Valley for methadone were years. There was over 400 people. So the desperation for treatment has decreased, and I think the level of violent crime in the Valley. There used to be pharmacy robberies every couple of weeks a couple years ago before there was more accessible addictions treatment. So that has been one step forward, but again, it's a reactive. Are we just going to keep dishing out methadone? Why do we need so much methadone? Why are there hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people on these waiting lists across the province? Are we going to deal and prevent people from becoming addicts and accessing these drugs? Are we just going to keep putting more and more money and have a whole portion of our population on methadone, which is extremely expensive?
Yeah, I want to talk a bit about the clinics that have opened up. Actually, Dr. Bob Mullen was on our program here filling in for John Gillis as we have our house call section. And Bob runs a methadone clinic up in the Valley there as well. He said that they've brought some sort of innovative best practices into place in making those things work. Can you tell us a little bit about what sort of impact that's had in the community?
Sure. He's actually, as far as I know, he is working with the AVH, the new program that I was just talking about.
Right.
And instead of walking in, getting your dose, and walking out, what they're trying to do is give a more balanced approach. So offer counseling. Also, there's urine testing. Take-homes are not just given right away. They have to be clean and have clean urine tests for so many months before they're even allowed to take that prescription home. There's just much more accountability, I guess, in the new program, whereas Mud Creek was just a free-for-all. And I don't even understand what is still going on there. I mean, I know you watch W5. I watch W5. There was undercover footage of patients outside that clinic displaying their track marks on their arms, selling their prescriptions, talking about how easy it is. They get this, they get that, they can get anything. And yet the clinic is still running and nothing has ever happened. I don't know how the public and undercover news crews can see track marks riddled up these patients' arms, but the doctors treating them can't, and they just keep refilling their prescriptions. I really feel like there is not enough accountability in the medical profession. And as long as they keep pumping out these drugs and people have easy access, we're constantly going to be running behind, trying to keep up with the methadone wait list. Police officers are going to be chasing drug dealers that have prescriptions for the drugs they deal. That's another thing, is police hands are tied in a lot of situations. It makes it very hard for them to convict prescription drug traffickers.
The question we have this morning for our audience is, are we doing enough to deal with prescription drugs on the ground? A report that actually was released last year seems to have kind of slipped under the radar here, saying that prescription opioids are second only to alcohol as a problem in terms of their prevalence in the community. You would think that things like heroin or crack or some other abused drugs would be up in that area as well. Not the case. It is now prescription drugs that have taken over that area. Amy Graves has been an advocate for a while in trying to reduce the prevalence of prescription drugs in the community. My question for you is, are we doing enough to do it, or do you still see it getting out there, and is there enough education happening? I know that you have worked with Dale Gelada. Her daughter Olivia died of a dilaudid overdose some time ago, and she's been talking to schools. What sort of response have you had from the Department of Education to some of your efforts. Amy, are we beginning to make some progress there in having this message, at least passed on to students?
In the individual schools, yes. Principals and teachers, health coordinators, they are realizing there is a need for this. In terms of the Department of Education, no. I met with the Minister of Education and her department. Dale Gelada met with the Minister of Education and her department, and within 6 months of each other, and we were each told that they basically are not going to change the curriculum until 2015. And in Dale Gelada's meeting, she told me they said that they don't usually implement something until at least 50% of the students are abusing that drug. So the statistics aren't quite high enough for them.
Whoa, what?
Yes. I think the actual number was 48%, but they have a certain percentage with the student drug use survey that if it reaches that percent, then they'll implement more education. And right now, the curriculum isn't expected to change till 2015. That is when they're going to redo it. And what we have now in our schools is a program in grade 9, which has a couple pages out of a couple hundred page book on prescription drug abuse, and the information in there is not even relevant to the drugs that kids are using. The student drug survey that was just released probably a month ago now, it indicated that prescription opioids are the highest abused substance for grade 7 students, more than cigarettes, more than marijuana, more than alcohol. Grade 7s are using prescription painkillers more than all of those substances. Yet we don't even have education until grade 9. And like I said, the education that is in grade 9 is very minimal when it comes to prescription drug use. And it talks a lot about OxyContin, which isn't even on the market. The drugs that are being used by our youth in our province are usually hydromorphone, morphine, even methadone, which is supposed to be used as treatment. Hydromorphone and methadone aren't even being included in that book.
I'm still staggered by the idea that they would not implement any kind of a significant education initiative until nearly 50% of the students, that's policy?
According to, this is what Dale told me, and I'm Ms. Gelada, and I'm pretty sure that they will not make any rash, they're not going to put anything out until curriculum comes up in 2015. They don't make any emergency changes until they reach that point. When I was in my meeting, one of the people who do the curriculum compared this, there's always fads. Like, are we supposed to change the curriculum because energy drinks are the new thing? You can't compare energy drinks to, have 400 people died since 2011 to energy drinks in our province. I mean, to minimize it in that way, yes, energy drinks are an issue, but kids aren't dropping dead monthly in our province. I really feel like the policymakers and professionals want to plead ignorance to this because, unlike illicit drugs, you can't blame the boogeyman. This was created by our professionals in our medical system. This now, when bath salts came out, they had working groups on top of it. They were laying charges. They had bulletins everywhere, and it was gone. But that's because they could blame organized crime. They could blame the boogeyman. These are the bad people doing this. But when it comes to the prescription drug issue, are we going to discipline doctors? Are we going to, relook at our prescribing guidelines? Are we going to take Big Pharma's influence out of our monitoring programs and College of Physicians and Surgeons? No, because they're above all of us, it seems. And, the buck stops there.
Amy, I'm just going to get you to hang on for a second because I know Charles wanted to make a comment here. Charles, what's your thoughts on what you're hearing here this morning?
Well, Jordy, you know, I hate to just harp on the fact that it's the 21st century, but the fact that doctors still write on a piece of paper or a triple copy piece of paper, hand this prescription off to someone to go to any pharmacy they choose for one of these controlled substances, and the reason they're triple copies prescription pads is because it's a controlled substance. Have it a digital pathway. No one gets a prescription in their hand. The prescription shows up. The person has to log in if they're getting one of these things. It's absolutely ridiculous. The digital footprint would exist forever on these prescriptions. So
you see this as a product of sort of archaic functionality rather than
absolutely
prescription?
Earlier you talked about HRM and best practices. Best practices in the healthcare system we're actually bereft of them almost. The healthcare in North America is the only sector that has reversed in productivity with regard to any other sector, business sector going. This whole idea that they're still writing prescriptions is ridiculous.
Okay, Charles, thank you very much for your comment on that. Amy, just before we go to the break, would you like to weigh in on that?
Sure. It is kind of archaic. We do have the prescription monitoring program, which is supposed to monitor these triplicates once they go into the system. But the problem is, you can monitor something all day long, but what are you doing with the information? I had somebody at one of my meetings say, you know, let's monitor crosswalk fatalities. We'll stand there and we'll count how many times somebody gets hit, and we'll monitor that until, you know, we turn blue. But what do we do with the information after? You know, okay, that's nice. 35 people were hit in the past 6 months on this crosswalk. Great. You know, and just leave it at that. That's what we're doing right now with our prescription monitoring system. Between 2009 and 2012, there's been a 25% increase in the sheer amount of narcotics prescribed, painkillers. 25% increase between 2009 and 2012. That's crazy to me. 782,865 narcotics. That's almost enough for every member of Nova Scotia to have a narcotic painkiller prescription for 1 year.
Amy Graves is with us this morning. We're talking about whether or not we're doing enough to deal with prescription drug abuse in this province. We are going to talk in a moment about stronger guidelines being called for the consumption of antipsychotic drugs given to children as young as preschoolers. Some experts say we'll find out why that's happening next on Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. Very troubling reports coming out of Ontario regarding guidelines being called for to control Canada's consumption of antipsychotic drugs. And that includes some very strong medication being given to children as young as preschoolers. Health Canada has been tracking the reports of some of the serious side effects, including deaths on children who are taking these drugs, which are called SGAs, or second-generation antipsychotics. And a doctor by the name of David Jurlink says that the prescribing of some of these drugs is dubious at best. Amy Graves is on the phone with us this morning to talk about this. We're talking generally about prescription drug abuse and how the drugs are getting into our system. This must be troubling for you as well to see this kind of information coming forward, Amy?
Definitely. I think it just, again, confirms that our society has this drug culture now where if we are in distress, whether it's pain, mental distress, we expect to go into a doctor's office and be given a medication to fix it. And often these medications, sometimes the side effects outweigh the benefit, and people don't take that into account when they go fill that prescription.
Well, some of the side effects are of these SGAs, these second-generation antipsychotics. There's a range of neurological side effects, something called acute dystonia, which is spasming of the muscles of the head and the neck, antipsychotic-induced akathisia, which means the kids are restless, extremely restless, and fidgeting, rocking while sitting or marching on the spot. Sometimes that side effect is seen as a symptom of an underlying condition, and then doctors are saying, "Well, you know, they've got this problem, so we're going to give them an increased dose or maybe another drug." They have been proven, I guess, useful in treating schizophrenia, but I guess the problem is that when doctors aren't able to see kids, they have to be monitored very carefully, and then they end up putting these kids on these drugs, and they stay on these drugs for, you know, months at a time, 4 to 6 months at a time, and don't get the kind of monitoring that they need or the follow-up they need. And here we're getting another generation of kids that are being drugged. And I get, there's this predisposition to simply going towards some sort of a pharmaceutical to solve a problem.
Yeah. Our society feels entitled to drugs. In the beginning, when the pharmaceuticals started coming out and, you know, vaccinations, and it was a good thing. But I think we've almost gone too far the other way, especially with children. I mean, these children's brains haven't even developed yet. And one of the courses that I'm studying in my program, I study abnormal psychology. And for diseases, or sorry, conditions like schizophrenia and other mental illnesses, they're not even supposed to be diagnosed. Like, a child, it shouldn't be diagnosed with schizophrenia. That's not something that you say 100% until they're, you know, finished growing up, because their brains change so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you put a label on a child at a very young age and get them on medication, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy in some sort.
No, I was just going to say, Stan Kuchar, he's the Sun Life Financial Chair in Adolescent Mental Health at Dal. He's been on this program very often. He says the question is whether these things are being prescribed in the right way or not, and that is a huge question as well. And the studies haven't been done to determine if that is the case. I just want to get a quick call from Trina in here. What's your experience with this, Trina?
Hi, Jordy. Hi, Amy. My experience, actually, my mom... this was in the 70s, and my mom could go into a doctor's office, and she had paranoid schizophrenia, and she got prescription medication like Valium, all sorts of other stuff, and I mean, she ended up committing suicide because of all these prescription medications. And when they found her, she actually had all these prescription medications laid out. And, you know, it's just, it's very sad what this can do. It's just, it's heart-wrenching. And Amy, I don't know if Jordy, if I could be on hold, I wouldn't mind sharing my story with Amy if she didn't mind giving out her email.
Okay, well, we can do that off air. Thank you, Trina, for your call. I'll just put you on hold here. Amy, look, I know that this is an ongoing story, but we always appreciate you coming in and providing us a little perspective on this. Thanks again.
No problem.
That is Amy Graves. Amy's brother, Josh, died as the result of a prescription overdose, an unwitting prescription overdose. A couple of years back. We're going to take a break. We'll be coming up in a couple of minutes with, I think, some interesting topics for you to chew over this morning. Duff Conacher is going to join us. He wants to free the MPs. He says Canada needs rules to restrict party whips. We're also going to be talking about genetically modified food. One university professor who studies such things at the University of Guelph says that Canadians don't fear genetically modified foods because either they don't know enough about it or they just don't care. That's after our newscast coming up on Maritime Morning.